Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and today on Theosophia Esoteric Studies, I'm proud to bring you Satori Speaks with the one and only Serpentis Satori. Greetings, Satori. How are you?
All right.
I'm glad to hear it, and I am intrigued by the topic today, the game of me. So I'm looking forward to seeing what you share with us.
Well, in Neil Gaiman's Barbie, back way back in Sandman, Barbie's origin story was called Game of You. And it is one of the weirdest Sandman stories.
I seem to remember
because
it's been years since I read Gaiman, but
it's the one with the snow and the talking animals, and it's a very weird Sandman story.
I seem to remember.
That's what we're referencing.
Okay, I remember the talking animals. I remember one of the animals got killed, one of them betrayed her, and I seem to remember it. I have all the Sandman comics. I don't have the television show yet. That I'm looking for it to come out for my collection.
But we are leading toward the really interesting question of, why do you do this? Who are you and what do you want?
Mm-hmm.
And in my case, as we move toward the new city adventures, I need to explain that I do things way back when, back in New Orleans in the 90s, my Bonsar friend, one of these Wiccan goody two-shoes girls, said she was a psychotic, bloodthirsty bitch. And my counter-argument is, it's not her fault. She and I must play D&D in real life.
Okay.
We must collect magic items and gold. And we kill monsters. That's what we do. We kill monsters. And if you have a problem with that, that's a different thing.
Now, are we talking about actual monsters, metaphorical monsters, etheric monsters?
Yes.
Okay. monstrous tyrannical structures that enslave people.
Yes. Sometimes it's Hydra, but not always. Sometimes it's just the monsters come for us and we come back. If you're going to challenge a demigod, Zeus doesn't really like that much.
Mm-hmm.
Zeus pretty much sends demigods when he just doesn't want to hear about this anymore. That was her answer. Her answer was more about, like, Zeus just doesn't want to do this again.
What, send demigods?
Yes, because that's expensive.
Okay.
Especially when it's me and Talia or me and you, sending demigods to solve a problem is expensive.
I never saw things in that particular way before.
Well, as a child of Hecate, we have to take care of the books. So we are aware of, like, you could build a Death Star for this. If that's what we were doing, we could do that.
Uh-huh.
But the argument with her was more about understanding our lives as Dungeons and Dragons, because people that are harm none or a little bit more goody two-shoes don't understand. I'm here to kill the monsters. I can't harm none. I'm here to kill the monsters. Get out of my way.
I framed it during my stint in New York City, those aspects of what do you call confronting bureaucracies and injustices, and you know what I was doing was framed in warrior language, and it is very effective, you know, in terms of the archetypes involved and the stories attached to the archetypes. They have a great deal of power and energy inside of them.
Well, the 80s Helen of Troy said something to me about if humans could do this, they would, but they can't, so we're here. If humans could fix this, we wouldn't have to fix this. We could just get drunk.
Very true.
And that is one of the major misunderstandings on every level with both priestly types, because priests are like, but you're a priest of Akathe. No, I'm her son. Like, Cersei's her daughter. Like, we don't, you think we have choices we don't have. Cersei and I have to do what we have to do. We just call each other every day. That's fine, but you don't understand. We are playing from a different rule book and are playing a very different video game.
Right. And this type of framing has become more popular since Riordan's books came out. You know, before when we first started, even though it was understood, the nomenclature for demigods was not in wide use.
Oh, but I love the Riordan books, because I wish the Riordan books existed when I was in college. So many of my college girlfriends would be better off if I could have just been like, no, but Percy Jackson's real. But that's how it is. What you're not understanding about me is that Akate's real. And I'm her son. And there's a chain of command. And this is my sister, Cersei. Meet my sister, Cersei.
Yes.
Go ahead.
No, the cluster of personalities in the stories translates very well into the human equivalences in the here and now. And I never thought in my journey that I'd see such level of archetypal interaction on the physical plane, I guess we call it, or in the imagination that we're currently enjoying. So we are living in wonderful times, in heroic times, in really cool times.
Well, I mean, that's part of what the gods wanted from Riordan, because Riordan's books make a lot of things crystal clear that I so wish I had had in college. I so wish my college girlfriends could understand, like, no, Gate's my mother. It's not... I know you're a trekker, but yet I'm here because Hecate says I'm here. Because Hecate assigned me to Bureau 31, and I get that, but I'm still a child of Hecate. I'm still here because there are things you cannot do. And on some level, I think that's what we demigods are always doing. We're doing what they cannot do or will not. That's a different moral question.
Yeah, again, we are endless variations of a timeless tale, or a bunch of timeless tales, if you would. And once you can see that, the understanding that you come to is that the story is continuously being told in slightly different ways, as it was in days of old, and it's still being done today. So you have more choice if you fall into archetypal patterns, in that you know that you can make changes to the archetypal pattern or the tale that surrounds itself around the archetypal title. And these variations exist. If you look for them, you'll find them.
Well, I just had to explain to Cersei the "you have always been here" thing from Babylon 5. Because she got on me about something, and I'm like, no, I have always been here, like I have always been in the French Quarter of New Orleans. I have always been here. The reason the gun passed over me and I did not die the other day is because I have always been here. I do not have to like that. I must accept that. Because that's how it is. That's Moriah. Our destiny is not very flexible, if we're Greek.
Well, it is and it isn't. It isn't in the sense that, again, you're living a variation of a timeless tale, but it is because you're living a variation. And once you realize that you can make changes, you might find a better way, and the old story need not live itself out. And it takes a long time to see it, and it takes an even longer time to figure out how you can make a change. But the choice is always there. If you're not consciously aware of archetypal patterns, then, again, you're doomed to repeat the story over and over and over again until you have those realizations.
Well, that leads us back to levels and rebranding and how you go through all of this changes how people on the outside see it.
Right.
Because a long time ago in Cleveland, a galaxy far, far away, I was I did some bad things to bad people, but that's because I was more or less Moon Knight. And I have Moon Knight's excuse about they were bad people. You don't want them here. Had I not done that, what would you do? And then in New Orleans, I end up this very strange character because I am a Rosicrucian Magus who works at Reverend Zombie's House of Voodoo. And no one understands that. We could do a whole episode on that. Now, everyone always wonders what the hell I did wrong.
No, I don't see that as doing wrong. I see that, again, the endless variation. And during the Hellenistic era, the theosophies and theurgies were born that were based on an understanding of the sameness of esoteric teachings as opposed to exoteric teachings. So I don't see that at all. That's your palette. for the gods.
That's external perception, but let's talk about that, because okay. this is where people on the outside don't understand my inside, because I never thought anything was weird about that. And when I went through my tiny little existential crisis about that, the most elder practitioner in New Orleans says, you are either super retro or you're a precursor. You are either something from the 12s, or you're trying to show us the way. And at the time, because I'm hermetic and work at a beauty shop, that seems very weird to the witches. That is very weird to the witches. But the voodoo people are like, no, this was normal 100 years ago. You're fine. We know what your necklace means. It's good to have one of you back around.
Yeah, I find
welcome for joining us, sir.
I find that I'm attracted to the more universal aspects. I love the ethnic aspects of the Greco-Roman Olympiad, and a lot of my of who I am comes from that pantheon and its stories. However, I'm also very attracted to the Theosophical, which is much more universalist. So you have Hercules working with Archangel Michael, working with Athena, working with Faith and Sophia and Victory, and Master Moria from the Theosophy, all working together to do the same type of thing. And then each of the cosmic rays has another set of people working on related things, and then they work together, and even though they're working on different things. And I find that very comforting, that beyond our tribalism, you know, there are other faces to the powers, and becoming familiar with them and working with them does not take away from the initial template with which you're the most resonant.
But on the outside, that has always been both your conflict and my conflict, is even though we are attempting to meld, like Spock, we are trying to mind meld things that are externally separate. Because I never thought, when I was a Rosicrucian Magnus at Reverend Zombies, what I was doing was different. Everybody else just told me it was, except that one person who just thought I was retro.
Okay.
Well, she never, at one point, like your organization, she thought I should just be the youngest elder, and then a bunch of other dangerous young people blew in New Orleans, and then she's like, no, you answer to me, and they answer to you. I'm like, okay, that's fine. Okay, sure. But originally, she was saying there was a place where our traditions, part of where Veve come from in Haitia, is connected to where your hermetic sigils, your planetary squares, all of that is connected. And you see that, and I see that. but you're you and I'm me.
Right.
And we see that. No one else chooses to. And that's always been the weird issue for me. Because I am always the odd man out in any magic group. Because I'm a child of a Kate and a Thelemite and a witch doctor. So no one knows what to do with me. Ever. Because
well,
I am all of those things. No, go ahead.
That gives you a lot of freedom, though.
It gives me tremendous freedom, but it also makes me very outside of everyone's bounds. No one knows how to say anything to me. Like, I live in Humble Park in Chicago. I'd explain to one of my roommates part of my situation here was because I was brought in as a peacemaker, that there was about to be a problem, and I blew in, and I'm like, no, do you know who I am? Do you know what I did in New Orleans? I'm fine with doing it again. I'm fine with that. I'm older, but I'm still fine with that. But that's, you know, killing bad guys and taking magic items and gaining levels. I'm not afraid to fight because I'm not afraid to. Because that's just how it is. And me being in my weird, out of bounds, out of the Venn diagram situation just means I, in some ways, see everything more clearly than everyone else.
Well, your perspective is clearer because you cross lines and, yeah, like I'm finding several of my perspectives that I developed in my exploration of Hyperborean spirituality and African spirituality and so forth. In pursuit of a greater understanding of my operant archetype, I guess. These perspectives allow me to see things that normally I would not be able to see if I stuck very closely to my dominant archetype.
Well, the Book of the Law says, he shall see all in a clear light, and some, though not all, shall see him in the dark. And that is a very interesting passage.
Yes, it is.
That is one of those places in the Book of the Law where requires meditation.
Yes, that is a very interesting book requiring a lot of meditation.
But the whole point about Game of You is you are trying not to... People on the demigod path are always trying to kill the monster. And when you get in their way, they're like, help me or get out of the way. Just
right.
Help me or get out of the way. It's really simple from my point of view.
But when you've tackled a few monsters or a few dragons, as they're popularly called in the literature, you realize that those are aspects of yourself. So you're looking into a funhouse mirror.
Well, that's Clive Barker, my enemy, myself. That's a magicka. That is the very devil at the bottom of a magicka.
And it's very true. You tackle those, like a lot of the social things that we react to and we talk about. If we meditate deep enough and far enough, we'll see that the issues are central to our own evolution, resolving the issues. So the issues manifest where you can see it and not like it. Again, the change, you can address it in terms of making the change in the external world. But if you make the change in the internal world, you get a different...
Chris Cornell says, blow up the outside world. There's a whole song called Blow Up the Outside World.
I have to hear
but
it.
He's a Shiite. He's a Shiite. He and Billy Corgan are Shiites, so we have to take that with that.
With that, okay.
I have to interpret my Shiite brothers as Shiites.
And
they want to blow up the outside world.
We met during an exploration of African Santeria, Afro-Caribbean, I guess, spirituality you would call it. And you're one of the few people that I met at the time who could see the parallels between Afro-Caribbean spirituality and ancient Greek spirituality. And I remember
because of my blessed friend, the daughter of Oya, who was so protective of me in New Orleans, she and I had a number of conversations about Oya and Hecate. And she was very good with understanding that there was no boundary, that
right.
The boundary is language.
Yes.
The boundary is, like I said, it was in those conversations I said what I said last time about cultural garments.
Mm-hmm.
Because she was a child of Oya from being a teenager, but she was more than happy to contribute to my Hecate things. She understood that it was a cultural boundary that was Hecate is the Greek name, Oya is the Puerto Rican name. It's the same but different.
Right.
In the same way it is with my Indian boss, when he saw me wearing the lightning bolt necklace, he says something, and I say, you say Indra, I say Zeus. It's the same but different. My
right.
culture doesn't see it the way your culture does, but it's still the same.
Yes, and that's the conversations I've had about hard and soft polytheism. It seemed to get stuck there.
That's the problem with hard polytheism is hard polytheism focuses too much on character and not enough on power. I am probably a softer polytheist than you are, actually, because you and I have had this conversation before.
Right.
Even the women think I'm maybe a closet Hindu, which is what's so funny about that I work for Indians now. But I've been accused of being a closet Hindu for 30 years. That I agree with them about everything but diet. And I'm like, no, that's about judgment. No, Hecate won't let me do that. Hecate wants her steak. I can't do that for her. And the Indians have to be like, but my goddesses, Hecate and Nike and Persephone, you just don't have. You have 1,000 gods, but you don't have mine. And, well, that's that, right?
And you can look at it in various levels, too, because the gods repeat. They have different paths. So Hercules, for instance, is Balarama, the twin brother of Krishna. And a lot of people studying Greco-Roman mythology forget that Hercules was a twin. but those aspects of him don't really play out in the Olympian mythology of the Mediterranean. And he's also the lion incarnation of Sheba, whose name I'm forgetting right now, even though it was in my brain a little while ago.
That's Kashmiri. I think that's what the Kashmir song is about. By Zeppelin.
Oh, really?
Sort of. Yeah.
And Indra I knew about as a child, because I remember describing to my parents when I was too young to have read this anywhere or seen anything about it. It wouldn't be something on TV anyway, about the god on the white elephant who was upset at being woken after he'd been asleep for a while. And so I was listening all these trivia from the mythology of Indra. And I knew back then that Indra was, you know, basically what I was calling Zeus and Hercules and so forth. And I shared this story enough where I'll share it again because it sheds a little light on what we're talking about. I was aware of the African religions because I have Cuban relatives. So because
right.
I'm Greek, I was used to having the Greek version of Christianity be different than the American version. So my take on it was just the Cuban version was different than the Greek or the American version. That was just because every people had their own version of Christianity. But it wasn't until much later in life when I worked in rehabilitation where I went to someone's home. I was sent there by the agency. And they immediately reacted to this necklace I was wearing with Thor's hammer and red and white beads. And they said that I was sent by Shango. So I started helping the person. I resolved their problems very easily. And I learned the beginnings of the details of the Afro-Caribbean religions. And then I understood a lot of what I experienced as a child with my relatives. You know, they had parties for the gods or the saints, and people were ridden by the saints and so forth. That again, I just attributed to weird culture, weird language, but there was so much more to it. And that led to our conversation, and we're still discussing things.
Well, I mean, that conversation got us both in a lot of... We both got kicked off that list for that conversation.
Yes, I remember.
I was like 3 days away from being voted in as an elder, too.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. I'm sorry for depriving you of that honor.
No. The will of Hecate is the will of Hecate, and that's her sense of humor. That she's like, well... You were there, and they liked you until you said, Reverend Zombie's House of Voodoo. And then the prejudice kicks in.
Yep.
And then the prejudice kicks in.
Yeah, I remember.
But that's part of... that's part of my story. That's part of what you're talking about my otherness. Is mm-hmm. that because I am a child of Hecate, because I'm Rosicrucian and Voodoo and a child of Hecate, I am living in a very interesting island. And the rest of you, including Circe, occasionally have to think about how things work on my island because I am okay. There is a book by another guy in Chicago called Greek Tragedy for Modern Audiences.
Okay.
The thesis of his book is heroes are both transgressive and transformative.
Right.
Yes, but you and I as demigods just say right. The people that do not understand like the D&D line. They do not understand because they wish us to be what we are not. And we can't be that because we are stuck in D&D and being transgressive and transformative. We are not that. I am not trying to build a ministry. I'm saving, like Captain America, I believe in individuals. I don't believe in America or society. I'm not sure what any of those ideas mean anymore.
So the world is in chaos. We need to...
The world is a vampire. Billy Corrigan says the world is a vampire sent to drain.
There we go.
Yeah, let me quote my bard.
Well, I've come to, in the past few days, I've come to accept that it's a harsh realization, but that my journey, even though it seemed to take me very far, actually didn't. I didn't fall far from the tree that brought me into this world, culturally or, you know, in terms of basic understandings. And if I focused on the things that I knew, my journey would have been a lot shorter, a lot less interesting also. But there we go. And that's a hard pill to swallow when you see yourself as transgressive and transformative, and you could point to examples where that dynamic worked to people's benefit. But it's still, we're operating within a very narrow band, even though it seems that...
When I became friends with Cersei, I realized I had come full circle.
Uh-huh.
That I had come all the way back to who I was when I was 16. But this time I got to be the witch with the cheerleaders. This time it was okay. Somehow I had come all the way to New Orleans and back again. And the lesson is, it's okay. For all you've journeyed, for all you've done, the lesson is, it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I had that conversation with Cersei, because someone else called her a white witch and set me off that night, because I'm like, I don't want to have a conversation with her. I'm saving that, and why did you do that to me? I do not want to discuss either of those words with Cersei right now, today. Because she's Cersei, and that's complicated because the book says one thing and popular culture says another thing. And Cersei's my favorite sister, so why did you say that? And the other girl is like, but she's a witch. Like, power serves itself. Welcome to the Bene Gesserit. In my world, we're just the Bene Gesserit.
Mm-hmm.
And she's and like, what do you mean? Like, go ahead.
And those are powerful mythic associations, too. It might be in science fiction, the mythology, in terms of Frank Herbert's creativity, but it's captured the imagination of very many people. It's been released in various forms throughout the years, and it's a valid mythology, just as valid as the ancient ethnic mythologies. Star Wars, even though I'm not a big fan of Star Wars, Star Wars serves the same purpose. Star Trek serves the same purpose. Babylon 5.
There's a different Thor. We have a different Thor for that.
We have a different way?
Thor Skywalker is that guy.
Yeah.
We have a different guy for that.
I've seen his
video. That's a different department.
But still, the archetypes repeat and have a voice through people in these different mythologies. As you pointed out, I've been involved with Star Trek fandom on and off for very many years.
On that note, I'm watching something called Center Chair, which is a very, very long history of Star Trek. And it's very good.
If you could send me a link, I'll check that out.
I have a Roku TV, so it was free on my Roku. So
okay.
I just started watching it, and it's pretty cool. And Gene Roddenberry's birthday was yesterday.
Oh, wow. I'll have to post something on that. Thank you for letting me know. He's a great bird of the galaxy.
Well, he has issues, but like lots of geniuses, he has issues. Him and Harlan Ellison and their little adventure together.
Yes, I met Harlan.
Bless you, Harlan. But
I never met Gene in person. I've met his wife, and I've met a lot of people from Star Trek, from the TV show, from the movies, or TV shows rather, and the movies. But I never met Gene Roddenberry face to face.
No, I only met Nimoy. Of all those guys, I met Nimoy for like 2 minutes. And he just gave me live long and prosper.
Okay, good. That's a good gift to have.
Well, it's Nimoy. I mean, in the same way when I met you two, Ed just nods at me. And it's the same thing.
Yep.
You're like, yeah, good to see you. Glad you're here. Gosh.
Now,
you're a Clive Barker character. Glad you're here. Glad.
People who suspect that they may be demigods, because, again, it's a new term being used outside of a very small number of people, and Riordan brought the term to awareness. How would somebody know if they're a demigod as opposed to a priest or a priestess?
This goes back to something one of the Egyptians said to my coworker, my Bonsar friend, a long time ago, because he was trying to figure out whether or not she was a priestess of Isis or it was different. And her answers make her not a priestess. She is not a priestess. Like, my answers do not make me a priest of Osiris. I'm not a priest. The answer in modern English is Taylor Swift's fans are Swifties. It is one thing to be a Swiftie and love Taylor Swift. It's very different to work for her. If you're a demigod, you are a child and you work for that god.
Right.
Part of what you are having to deal with is I had a gerrymandered district, and I went from working from Hecate to working for the British Isles and the Caribbean Islands because I was differently gerrymandered this year. But you didn't want to lose me as your whip, so you're like, your district's just weird. Like, yeah, my district's just weird. We just have to deal with it.
Yeah, I'm okay with it.
I'm fine with it. I was just gerrymandered in a really, really weird way, but that's okay.
I had to explain recently how the Hercules that I embody and express is indeed very Hermian in very many ways, and I was able to basically point to what makes that so. But again, it's weird, it's other, it's outside, and it doesn't fit into most people's conception of what a Hercules should or would be. And yet, it's there, expressing itself in the here and now.
It's right there, but that's been my problem my whole career, is I'm a Thelemite child of Hecate, who's the Rosicrucian, and a doctor. So no one knows what to do with me. Everyone throws up their arms, and everyone's like, Satori, Satori. we can't deal with him, so we just have to accept that.
And that's not a bad place to be.
It's a very interesting place to be because it means when I was removed from the hierarchy, they just handled it like, you have a weird district. You're still the whip, but you have a weird district. How did you end up the district? How is Orke and Haiti in the same district? Like, I have no idea how that works. I didn't do that. That's not my fault.
I never perceived you as a whip. I perceived you as a coffee companion, basically.
In British, the British see it that way because of House of Cards. Because of the British House of Cards, I am a companion, but I'm your political companion, and I'm the guy who's like, no. And in politics, that guy is the whip.
We have had numerous political conversations, but we've also had conversations on comparative mythologies and science fiction. And these are deep and thought-provoking conversations, or at least I've found them so over the decades. And like all the wizards that have been assigned to me in my journey, you appear and disappear, I guess, when you're supposed to. So that's normal in terms of our interactions over the years. But I've always seen it, again, not in a particular function, but in terms of, like there was Neil Gaiman's story where the Sandman met with some guy who was immortal every century or so, or for a long or short period of time. That's kind of like how it's framed in my mind.
I forget that character's name too. Yeah, I understand what you mean.
So it to me that's what it is. It's basically meeting with people you might not be in total resonance with in terms of where they're standing, but the conversation itself is very.
Well, you and I are in the same video game. You and I understand that we are playing within the same world building rules.
Right.
And because we are playing within the same rules, you and I can have conversations with each other that would seem strange to everybody else.
Correct.
Because everybody else would be like, huh? What? The Axe of Chongo, the Hammer of Thor, what the hell are you talking about?
Right.
Go back.
And that, more than anything, protects occult conversations. The fact that they sound very nonsensical and very bizarre to a lot of people, so they're easy to dismiss.
Well, one of my roommates was asking me about, like, what class I am, and I'm like, no, I'm an occultist, because everything I know I can't really explain. And to explain it means I have to teach it to you.
I've come to a similar understanding, and a lot of these conversations that have been going on for years through the podcast are attempts to get this information out there in ways that people can, you know, understand it if they're ready to or interested in understanding it.
I mean, that was the point of today. The point of today was to set up New City Adventures. Because those on the outside need to understand why I would still do adventures at my age, why I still want to do it. And it's not about wanting to do it. It's about the ends. It's about I must go forward because there is only forward.
And at this stage in the game, I'm starting to play old man Hercules because age is catching up with me. So that's starting to get integrated into the tale. Fortunately, there are heroic templates in the literature, some ancient, some modern, that lend precedence to this. From antiquity, there's Hercules wrestling with Yeras, who is old age personified. And we don't have any of the stories surviving, but we have examples in art which show Hercules fighting against old age. And then they have other ones with Hercules and old age, like having a chat. So the lesson that's imparted to me is that, you know, basically, yes, I will, because of my nature, struggle against its process, but I'm not going to win. So I have to accept it and come to terms with it and change what I'm doing a little bit to accommodate the new role that I'm playing.
Well, last November, when the New Orleans Sevens Blood Oath scattered, when we were all released, we all speechified for too long. Y'all know who I mean. Y'all know who I'm talking about. We all speechified. But the point of those speeches was that, just like in soccer, once you're 30, you can't really play soccer anymore. You have to coach now.
Right.
And as powerful as the seven of us are, we now have to coach. We're done. Mostly done. Denzel just made a new Equalizer movie, so maybe we're not done. But we're supposed to be done. We're supposed to be retired to coaching. Because if you started when you were 13 and you're 45, you've given a good show. You've done what is need to be asked. And now it is your turn to train the young. Like Yoda said, teach what you have learned. And as hard for the seven of us as that is, because I understand, brothers and sisters, it's hard. I've done this for a year. It's hard. It's for the children. You have always been here. That's...
And that understanding when it comes is a hard... a pill to swallow too.
But it's very hard to give up being in the front lines of the military. It's very hard to give up being the wizard who is in front. It's very hard to do that. It's very hard to say, it's okay, it's your time to coach. And all of us must accept that soon. Because where we now are is where we have always been. We have always been here.
And we'll always be here. And all this has happened before, all this will happen again.
Yeah, but it's difficult for the New Orleans group, because we had always been in New Orleans, and Babylon 5 was part of Babylon 5 was sort of church for us, because Sheridan's issues reflected our questions. And now, 30 years later, we're still here.
And that's going to have to be the topic for our next conversation on the podcast, because we only have a few minutes left. How can people contact
My final thought is September 11th is a Michael holiday because it is about first responders and the military. So I am going to do a thing about the Horn of Heroes.
Okay.
On September 11th. Whoever wishes to join me in blowing the Horn of Heroes or the heroes of September 11th, may Michael bless us, because that is what I have been instructed to do.
That is awesome, and I'll help people link up to it to whatever level you want people to link up to it through Facebook. And through the podcasts and both audio and visual, just let me know. Michael, as you know, is a connecting energy or entity in what we're both doing, even though it appears different on the face of it. Michael is a connective presence. Michael is also a connective presence with many of the other people that I'm dealing with. So part of what I've been working on is raising awareness in certain communities that are inimical to Judeo-Christian symbolism, or what they perceive to be Judeo-Christian symbolism, by using the lore and imagery of Michael to create unity between more ancient spiritualities and more modern spiritualities.
Well, I mean, there's a through line with blowing the shofar on 9/11, the high holy days of Judaism, and Star Trek Day, because they're all right there. And Star Trek is really heavily Jewish.
Adam Sandler wrote a song that included a couple of lines about that.
Yeah, Adam Sandler makes fun of that, but it's still true. That Shatner and Nimoy, other than Kelly, they're almost all Jews.
So the signal that Nimoy used for live long and prosper, I believe, also came from the Jewish faith. I don't remember
it's the Kohen blessing.
Okay.
It's the blessing of the Kohen. That's a very Jewish thing. And so is the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few, I guess.
And they
My last Jewish girlfriend thought that was really weird.
Star Trek's created or sowed the seeds of a better future for all of us. And a lot of the things that we imagined for Star Trek or that were introduced through Star Trek are now realities in communication. So Star Trek altered our culture for the better in a very profound and significant way. A lot of people who invented this technology were inspired by Star Trek. And the robot voice informed me that we need to wrap up. We have 90 seconds. Thank you, Satori. As always, I enjoyed our conversation, be it on the air or off the air. And if you let me know more about blowing the Horn of Heroes, I will, of course, help people link up to it if they wish.
Well, call me in a minute.
Okay, I will talk to you in a minute. Be well, my friend, and thanks to a wonderful audience. Whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, whether you called and you're patiently waiting in our queue, or whether you're going to check us out later on demand, until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. And this show should be available for listening if you weren't listening live in about 15, 20 minutes or so. Good night, everybody. Have a great day.